you know, the state legislators are being hit with a tsunami of proposals to help with the land grab. And they're being hit with a tsunami of proposals to encourage sound money, whether it's gold, it's pretty much gold and silver because of their constitutional provisions. But when you try to focus them on the bank and the importance, you know, it should be all the state chartered banks who are in the state legislature saying, we need this to make sure we're protected when the boom, you know, when the game is upon us. But the bankers are not in the door and pressing for this. And so what I'm trying to figure out is, how do I help the state legislatures understand this is the most important thing? Without this, you know, we can do a lot to protect the land, and we can do a lot to make sure the state has bullion and a bullion depository and all sorts of other things, which I think are great ideas. But without the train tracks for fundamental financial liquidity, we're toast. How do I make this case?
The case for a state-level bank is one that, sort of unifies a lot of these possibilities in one institution. Of course, you can also do it differently, but by having a bank, a lot of people, you know, quickly understand what you mean, and they see the advantage. And there's the example of the Bank of North Dakota, state-level bank that's backing all the banks in that state. And that's been very, very successful. It's been going strong for a century. So it's a concrete proposal of what can be done. And right. Setting up a bank, you know, a bank is basically an accounting ledger, and the rest is common sense with some, you know, good accounting and some business experience. So it can be done. Every state could have it. The money you need is very limited. It can be provided by the state and will not be lost. In fact, will be increased by being right. a shareholder in that bank. And of course, citizens could also join. I mean, that's however you want to set it up. So I think that's a very concrete way of trying to explain it. Money is created by banks. Well, let's have a state bank to make sure we have state level money provision whenever needed.
So I'm headed back to Tennessee next week, and I'm hoping I can get with more bankers and find out. So the other thing I'm finding, Richard, as I travel in America, is it is remarkable how many very intelligent, educated, aware people have no idea that a total control grid is coming their way. They don't see it, and they don't understand the danger of it. And you, not only are you remarkable in your ability to explain why we can have an abundant economy, but also, and I think that's important because I believe we do need a reset of some kind. And but, you know, I would like a reset that builds wealth and keeps us free. But you're also very remarkable at warning people about the control grid that's coming. If we don't do these things,
yes,
we will find ourselves in a very bad place. So maybe if you could just describe why, you know, why it is essential to provide this kind of banking capacity and infrastructure, and what will happen if we don't. And I really want the bankers to understand, because they're all going to lose their businesses.
Exactly. That's right. So it started with, the thin edge of a wedge was the creation of the Federal Reserve. And the central planners have ever since been anti-bank. In the 1930s, when push came to shove, the Federal Reserve ensured that more than 10,000 small local banks went bust and depositors lost their money. And the Federal Reserve could have prevented this, but was quite happy with what happened. And that is the track record. And since then, post-war, number of banks just going down and down and down, the same in Europe. This is what central banks want. They want to concentrate their power. Ultimately, where they're heading, they want to be the only bank in town. And the big accelerator for this is central bank digital currency.
Right.
You know, a digital dollar will drastically accelerate this trend and give total power to the central planners. Because ultimately, it's the central bank saying, okay, well, we're not just the bank regulator. Actually, we're now going to take away the business from the banks, and we're going to do that business. You're going to have an account with the central bank, which, of course, is the unfairest competition you can imagine. You know, if the umpire steps into the game and says, I'm going to score the goals now.
It's also a takeover of the fiscal side of the house, Because now you have taxation without representation.
Exactly. And CBDCs, which are programmable, they are actually also fiscal policy. And mm-hmm. that means you're taking away the last area of power that politicians have had, whether they've used it wisely or not, which is fiscal policy. Normally you have parliament, you have votes, you know, about budgets and all that. Well, that's going to disappear because it was all be decided by the central bank, how resources will be allocated.
Right.
And there will be technical reasons why this is more efficient, we will be told, you know, but clearly it is the central planners, not just tackling the banks, they're also going to take away power from legislature.
They can program all the policies into your money. So if they don't want you traveling more than 15 minutes from your home, your money won't work 15 minutes. All those policies can be, you know, built
exactly.
into.
And they're doing this at the moment under the guise of, oh, it's because there's a climate crisis, they claim. Therefore, we need to just act and we can't worry too much about these constitutional details and political details. We just need to tell the banks, okay, for these and these things, you're not allowed to lend anymore. And nobody's stopping them. They're already grabbing the power that is mm-hmm. absolutely not theirs to make these resource allocation decisions. And that will only get worse.